From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. I'm looking at a picture right now of the late Daniel Smith and the late Anna Nicole Smith, also known as Vicki Hogan. To use the word tragedy would be an understatement when you talk about what's going on with these two particular individuals. And most recently, there is an inquest is still being held, a coroner's inquest is being held in the Bahamas, to try and determine the cause of death or why Daniel Smith died. And some of the information that we've seen, the reports that we've seen, is the jury can come back with the following rulings, I guess, is it was an accident, a misadventure, non-dependent drug use, or an open verdict. And to say it's confusing is to say the least. And what I thought I would do is go to my buddy, former FBI agent, former FBI bureau chief, and current private investigator, someone who knows quite a bit about this case, in fact, is heading back to the Bahamas soon, Don Clark. Don, welcome back.
Hey, Dana, it's good to talk to you.
This, you know, and I'm looking at, a very nice picture of Anna Nicole and Daniel, and it's just a huge tragedy what went on here. It was a media circus, frenzy, craziness, no matter what you want to call it. And now the inquest, which was delayed several times, is going ahead now. You were there. We might as well just start right at the beginning. What can you tell us what went on from your perspective in the Bahamas?
Well, here's what happened, Dana, is that we find ourselves in a situation where we are dealing in a foreign country that's so very close to us, we kind of want to tend to think that things are going to be business as usual as they may be in the judicial and the court systems in this country. And by far, that is by far from the truth. I mean, they have their rules and procedures based on British law and et cetera, and that's where the way that they go. And it's totally incongruous with the types of things that we do here. So, you know, we walk into a courtroom expecting an atmosphere very similar to what we have been in lawsuits or criminal cases in this country, a judge and a jury, which is totally different than what we have seen over there, and the procedures are totally different. Now, having said that, we didn't walk in there with American lawyers or so forth expecting them to do, because we are just visitors there, so
right.
We had to, in fact, hire our own Bahamian lawyer, who has been very good for us in this particular setting, to kind of get us through the maze of procedures that go through. And oftentimes we just encountered right from the beginning is that, look, you know, the types of things that you guys from America are trying to bring to us, it's just not going to be used here into the Bahamian court. But the reality is that what we really were really pushing to do is to get the court to make a determination as to how Daniel Smith died. And quite frankly, I'll be very honest with you, we've put a lot of hard hours in. We've had a lot of people helping us. You know, we've had investigative research consultants working with us and helping us. And I'm a little skeptical right now as to what the results are going to be. But at the end of that, I don't think that that's going to be the last procedure in terms of us trying to find out what happened to Daniel Smith.
Skeptical, I think, is a more than fair term when it comes to these jurisdictions and the procedures and the way they do things, for lack of a better term. And now, Don, this whole thing boils down to, yes, whatever the ruling will be, but what you and I and many of my listeners and those that have followed this story are wondering now is, when the ruling comes down, what's next after that?
Well, first of all, I don't want to jump the gun, Dana, because the ruling is not here, and I know that there's some things that's come out into the media, people like myself who are talking about things and so forth. But the reality is that in terms of what happens to Daniel, it's going to be left to Daniel, to the real finding of Daniel's demise. It's going to be left up to the Bohemians. The Americans cannot go in and say, we've investigated and we've found out. Because let me take us back just a little bit, Dana,
sure,
if you don't mind.
No problem.
You know when a crime is committed, you know, you have the crime scene. That's very elementary. And so you do everything you possibly can at that crime scene to extract every bit of evidence that's possible there. And then you preserve that evidence and statements, and you don't allow people to come as will, particularly those people who have been there, who were there and admitted to have been there at the time. I mean, those people you just don't allow to just move around and do whatever, because you don't go into that crime scene assuming that it could have been an accident.
Right.
You don't do that. You make the evidence lead you to the conclusion as to what took place there. Now, having said that, it appears to me, in some of the proceedings, is that the only acceptable evidence appears to be, and I stress appears to be, what was may have been found at the scene of Daniel Smith's demise. Now, Dana, you and I have talked before, and we both know that while there is a crime scene, there are activities that occurred before a crime has been committed. And that has to be connected to that scene. And then following that, there are activities and information that's gained by people talking, by what they say, what they do, even after, and sometimes long periods after the crime. Well, that evidence should be brought back in to that crime scene to try to put the case together. And based on what I'm seeing, that there is very little interest in what someone said a week, a day, 5 days after the crime.
You know, it's investigation 101, and no matter what the foreign jurisdiction, whether it's Aruba with the Holloway case or...
Yeah, exactly. Perfect chance. Right?
Yeah, the Bahamas with this case. And the media frenzy, the media psychotic behavior in some cases that went to the story and jumped all over it like a bird on a bug. It has to be difficult for a trained investigator, someone in the business as long as you have, and all the high profile cases that you worked on in all your years in law enforcement, to see something like this. You know, my God, man, you must be biting your bottom lip lots sitting there.
Well, you know, you must have had a camera in there. My personality doesn't necessarily lend itself to sit there quietly, but I'm very respectful, and I must say that the lawyers that's been with me, and Virgie and her family members, we've all been extremely respectful to the Bohemian court. I mean, that's their system and so forth. Doesn't mean that we agree with everything,
right,
but we've been extremely respectable to them. And I must say that the coroner has allowed, without telling us not to be able to pass a note or two from time to time to our Bohemian lawyer on things that we see. And I understand, and I really do like our Bohemian lawyer, because I think that under the circumstances, he's probably done us as good a job as we could expect. But there are often times that we see things that come up that we're in court all the time over here, and as you said, in my past life, most of it has been in criminal court, and now in civil courts all the time. I said, wait a minute, you know, let's shift this evidence in a new direction here and point out that there is a void here, and there are some facts here that could lead to evidence in this case. The whole thing is about developing evidence and people who will testify to what they saw, they heard from the scene, and what they actually saw at the scene, and people who were in homes and so forth, such as the nannies, who gave statements about different things that occurred there, which we think could have had great relevance to what took place in that hospital room that night, and it just wasn't allowed. So there we are.
Well, you know, the media frenzy, and I hate to, you know, to continue harping on this, but there has to be a point in a time where you question whether or not something, and these are my words, these aren't my guest Don Clark's words, whether a fair ruling can come out, whether a fair investigation can be done, whether a something that brings, you know, I hate using the term closure or answers to the family, in this case Virgie Arthur, because you have two young people who have left this earth, and there are answers that need to be brought forward. If you're just joining us, former FBI agent and former FBI bureau chief, current private investigator Don Clark is here talking about the inquest into the death of Daniel Smith. What we see on TV, Don, and what we should probably believe in a lot of cases is, I give it about a 60-40, 70-30 split. I think that's fair, because the reporters are going to sensationalize somewhat. They're also going to report what they have, but there's a lot that we're not seeing behind the scenes, and I think that's so important. Is there, you know, the whole question, of course, is methadone. That's the big one. That's the big kahuna, if we want to use that term with respect. Is there anything that you can comment on as far as the methadone part of it? I know of the toxicology and all that, but that's got to be so important here.
Well, clearly it is important, and it's all in evidence, and certainly I wouldn't be speaking about something that hasn't gone into evidence at this point. It's in open court. You know, Dana, there is no question that methadone is the issue. I mean, we've had medical experts come in and say that Daniel Smith died of a huge overdose of methadone. Now, there is no evidence, except for one small portion that I'll talk about in a second. There is no evidence that Daniel Smith took methadone. There is no evidence until about July of 2006 that Daniel Smith took medications. And this was at a point in time on the same day, July the 18th of 2006, that Howard Stern, who was visited in Los Angeles, departed from Los Angeles, headed back to the Bahamas, and that same day, Daniel Smith went into the hospital with great anxiety, and he was given a prescription to Leprechaul, certain medications before anxiety, you know, and that he was depressed. We now know that, and have had more than one person to tell us there is significant evidence that says that Daniel Smith was extremely depressed when his mother went to the Bahamas. He didn't want his mother to go to the Bahamas. He wanted her to be in this country. This was his country. You know, the Bahamas is a fine country,
right,
but the United States was his country, and he wanted his mom to be here in this country. So a reasonable person could conclude that, of course, he's going to be depressed. This kid has no history of this type of activity. And you find a quantity of methadone in his body that equates to something like 20 or 22 tablets. You know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to really figure out that what happened here. And here's the other aspect of that, is that this kid, everybody testified, again, on the records, nothing outside of the records here, everybody testified that he was so happy to be able to be invited to the Bahamas to visit with his mom and his little sister. So he's going to get there. He's laughing. We saw video footage of him. You talk about, Dana, a pep in his step when he walked into the hospital door. Just take a look at the video strip. You know, he can't wait to get upstairs to visit his mom and his sister. And he's upset with his mom because she won't let him keep the baby in his lap all night. You know? And he's going to commit suicide? I mean, without any shred of evidence, just that reasonable act says, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense here. And if it is, we better have some real good evidence to show that this kid just took methadone. No history of taking methadone. Everybody we talked to said he didn't. Now, and I will say there was only one piece of evidence that came in. Larry Burkhead presented that piece of evidence that said in Anna's home in California, Studio City, that with the camera system set up, they saw Daniel taking some methadone out of the refrigerator with two other people and going out the door. Now, you know, I'm not a forensic guy, but I've certainly been around enough forensics. I've certainly looked at enough videos, and I have to tell you, I have sat, Dana, in cases, World Trade Center case being one, you know, Jasper case down here being another, and just a number of cases, and looked at videos, and sometimes you've got to look at videos 10 or 15 times.
Exactly.
You can get a speck off what's taking place. So somebody was able to read methadone on that. It's possible, but it seems to me a little far-fetched.
Has the, as far as the process it goes, and I know there was quite a few, you know, press reports and lots of testimony, but the major players, the Howard K. Stern, Larry Burkhead, of course, you know, who you're working with or for Virgie Arthur, I'm not sure if the person who did the autopsy, Cyril Wecht, testified or not, but there has to be so much media attention in the Bahamas. Is it as crazy as it is in North America with the story, Don, or has it slowed down somewhat there?
Well, you know, Dana, surprisingly, it slowed down significantly. You know, when we talked a few times before, we were talking about not being able to get into the courthouse.
Right.
You know, because of cameras and people and all of the different media from across the country. Now, clearly, the American press has had their tentacles over there because we know how the system works. You know, you get strap hangers over there that write and give it to the American press. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fine with that, as far as I'm concerned, as long as it's fair reporting here. But it has not been to the magnitude, and it has not been the attention of the Bohemian people. I mean, it's a clear signal, and I don't say that with being disparaged towards the Bohemian government, because I have no reason to do that at all. But it is clear that people are saying that we don't care.
Yeah.
You know, we just want to get this thing over with and get it out of here. But on the other hand, I have also talked to, you know, the people who usually have their feet on the ground and know, you know, the cab drivers, the wonderful people who are cleaning the hotel rooms. You know, I'm a runner, so I'm running down the streets and I'm talking to the guy who, stop and talk to the guy who's unloading the trucks, getting ready to set up their little stand for noonday meals and so forth. And they'll come right out and says, oh, we know this. We think the boy was killed. Yeah, of course. There's no way that this could happen. That's their own opinion. They haven't heard any evidence. So they're not detached from it, but they're not congregating around the focal point, which happens to be the courthouse, as they were when we were over in the Bahamas doing the first part of these series.
The one of the big things that has come up, Don, and a lot of us are, you know, are skeptical as far as the reports go, and seeing you were there, I'll ask you. It says that the instruction went out to the jurors that homicide has been ruled out as an option, as a cause of death, as Daniel Smith. Can you confirm or deny that?
That's not true. That's categorically not true. And in fact, the jury has not been instructed of anything up to this point. We anticipate that the instructions will come about on Monday. There was argument in open court by the Attorney General's office, as well as Howard Stern's attorney and our attorney, that suicide should not be considered an option. And in fact, to me, the judge seemed to be quite surprised to hear that argument. Obviously, I was quite elated, and my friend Neil McCabe, who's the attorney there with me, we were absolutely elated to see that suicide may not be an option. Now, the judge has not ruled yet, and he has not instructed the jury as of this point that suicide is not an option. That will take place on Monday, hopefully, when we go back.
Here we call it the charge to the jury or the jury instruction or whatever you want to call it. That actually hasn't happened yet. So the media reports that we're seeing are false when it says that.
That's inaccurate. You know, before I walked out of the courtroom, you know, people that I work with back here in Houston, and it's been really significant and keeping me abreast of many of the things and aspects that's going on here, one person in particular, I was getting calls telling me that, look, it's already decided. This is what somebody has already said in their article or on their blog or whatever, is that it's over, you know. It's a suicide or it's not a suicide or homicide is off the table. As of this point, not even suicide is off the table simply because the judge has not given that charge to the jury yet.
When you go back, when is this all going to take place again? I'm seeing March 31st.
Yeah, and that's the date right now, Dana. The judge has been very good, at least at following the calendar to try to move the process. It seems like to me it's been an eternity, and I know it feels that way to Virgie and my team that's working with it. We've just been going and coming, going and coming, and we have to be there because we have an interest in this. You know, there's a board that's dead, and the truth needs to come out somewhere along the line as to how this boy died, and the things that if can be ruled off the table, if suicide can be ruled off the table, I look at that as a significant gain in our effort, because to me it would just be mind-boggling to conclude that in the attitude that this young man was, his history, his activities, he was a good boy. You know, and of course, you know, I use that phrase, and many people say that when people get involved in bad things.
Right.
He was a good boy, but he got involved in things. Well, in this case, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Daniel Smith was involved in prescription-type drugs. And I have not heard anything about his sampling with being involved in any other types of drugs.
Well, it's going to be interesting for sure, and you know, the whole world watches this case. Some will say why, some will say what for. It's hard not to be gripped by the facts, and you know, Anna Nicole Smith, whatever you thought of her career, who has now left this earth, her son, it was just a tragedy right from the get-go, and it certainly needs some sort of closure. And Don Clark, I appreciate you coming on. We'll have you on again after the 31st, and maybe we can talk more.
We look forward to it, Dana. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Don. Bye-bye. That's former FBI Bureau Chief Don Clark talking about the death of Anna Nicole Smith's son and the Bahamian inquest that's going on. He'll be returning to the Bahamas, and this all gets going again on the 31st of March. I've got about 5 minutes before we get to our next guest. Mike McIntyre will be here from the Crime and Punishment radio show. We're going to talk about an interesting case of a Canadian lady named Brenda Martin, who is spent the last 2 years in the Guadalajara prison in Mexico without a trial. She says she's innocent, and it's another story of a foreign national, this case a Canadian, in a foreign jail being held without trial and all that's involved with that. And then I want you to go to a website, www.savebrendafund.com, and we're going to have Paul Macklin on to talk more about Brenda Martin. They've started up a fund and a website to tell more about her case. If you want to sneak in a quick call before we go to a break, you can, 1-306-842-7884, 1-306-842-7884. And then another thing we're going to do tonight, by popular request, is we're going to re-air last week's show as soon as I'm done tonight's show. We had some server problems, and a lot of you that like to listen live weren't able to, so we're going to re-air last week's show, which was a good show also, tonight at the end. So when we sign off tonight, don't sign off, because there's much more of Scared Monkeys Radio and the Dana Pretzer Show to follow. Again, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with Mike McIntyre. He's a crime reporter with the Winnipeg Free Press and the host of the nationally syndicated radio show Crime and Punishment. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. Have you ever wondered about this nightmare? And I think we've seen it in the movies, we've read about it, but for one particular Canadian citizen, a gal by the name of Brenda Martin, who spent the last 2 years in a Mexican jail, a Guadalajara prison, without trial. And she's been in Canadian media and some international media lately saying that if she doesn't get out or at least get some help from the Canadian government, she's going to take her own life. I thought it was a fascinating story, and someone that's been covering that story is Winnipeg Free Press crime reporter and, of course, the host of the nationally syndicated show Crime and Punishment, Mike McIntyre. I'll say it right yet.
I get that a lot.
Or is that Mac McIntyre? I don't know. Anyway, Mike McIntyre. I thought I'd bring him on to talk about this. He's covered it on a few shows. And Mike, welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good to be here.
Well, this is live radio, so we don't edit things out, even if I call you Mac McIntyre.
I do get that a lot. Of course, Mac could very much be a first name, although I've yet to meet anybody by the last name of McIntyre. But it'd be interesting. There could be a Mac McIntyre out there.
This is Brenda Martin's story. You covered it on your last show, and before that, it's really hit the press in Canada. It's got to be a nightmare. I'm not sure about the truth or the guilt or innocence aspect of it. We've heard all sorts of crazy spins on this. Share with my audience the story of Brenda Martin.
Yeah, this is certainly one that has captured the attention of the public and politicians as well. And at the middle of this, you've got a woman now sitting in a prison, and I don't imagine, Dana, a very nice prison.
No.
In Mexico. Certainly not compared to probably what we see in Canada. And she has yet to have her day in court, and I think that should be troubling no matter where anybody stands on her guilt or innocence. The fact that this woman has gone over 2 years without having a hearing, I think, is very much at the crux of this case. Brenda Martin is essentially accused of playing a role in a fairly massive fraud scheme. Some 15,000 people were bilked out of about $16 million U.S. At the center of this is Brenda Martin's former boss. She actually worked for a man named Alan Wage. And Alan Wage was the mastermind of this internet-based fraud scheme. And Alan Wage is currently serving a 10-year prison sentence in North Carolina. He's been convicted already. Brenda Martin was his chef. And Brenda Martin has been alleged to have played a role in this scheme. It hasn't been laid out exactly what role she played. After all, she was the chef, not the bookkeeper or the financial planner or the assistant to Alan Wade. She was his cook. And yet Mexican authorities have detained her, alleging that she was involved in this operation.
And now going on over 2 years, she hasn't had a chance to have her day in court. She has repeatedly screamed from the rooftops, in fact, that she is innocent. She has done nothing wrong. Alan Wage, the man in prison, the mastermind, has claimed that she did nothing wrong, that she had no knowledge or insight of what he was up to. Of course, you have to take anything a man like he says with a bit of a grain of salt, given his complete and utter lack of credibility.
Exactly.
But it does raise the question of whether we're talking about an innocent woman who is sitting in jail, in a foreign jail, and I think that is what very much has a lot of citizens up in arms and now has the attention of Ottawa.
It's interesting to see and to hear Brenda in the media, very emotional, obviously, pleading, threatening to take her life. A Mexican jail, like you say, has to be an absolute nightmare of the umpteenth degree. But we're hearing stories now that, and again, the credibility of them and the truth of them are yet to be checked, that she may be part of a 500,000 or 250,000, I've heard two stories, bond that was apparently put out on this guy in Mexico, and because he never stood trial in Mexico and is in the States, that she is serving the time because he owes that money. Is there any truth to that?
Well, yeah, he's Alan Wage has called Brenda Martin a form of human ransom. That they are holding her and punishing her until and unless they get the $500,000 he apparently owes them. And as you point out, Dana, he was released on this bond by Mexican authorities, and essentially what that means is he promised to pay $500,000 should he violate any terms of his release. Well, he did. He fled Mexico and he went to Costa Rica, has now never paid this money back, and so he's saying, well, they're taking it out on her. What credibility does Alan Wage have? Although at the same time, what reason does he have to lie? He's not saying this to get himself out of a situation. In fact, if anything, he's putting it more on him. You think, if anything, a criminal might say, well, yeah, I had other people, and, you know, try and deflect some blame off himself. Well, he's not saying that. He's saying, no, she didn't know anything about this. Why is she being punished? So I think we have to put some credence to that, and I think we all have to be very skeptical whenever we talk about the justice system in a foreign country, especially one like Mexico. You and I have talked about it in the past, Dana. A lot of credibility problems from the prosecutors right on down to the police forces. And so it wouldn't shock me if something like this could very much be happening, that this woman is essentially and I guess literally paying the price for someone else's misdeeds.
Some of the criticism I've heard about Brenda Martin is from families of other foreign national Canadians, Americans, whoever, that are in jail in other jurisdictions, other countries, saying that she's hogging the media spotlight. I'd like to get you to comment about that, Mike. And what has Foreign Affairs Canada been able to do? I know I heard Brenda complaining that there were a couple of photo ops, she called Canadian government officials that went to Mexico but didn't think that it would help her much.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the same criticism, and people, in fact, called into my radio program this past weekend and essentially said the same thing, that, you know, Brenda Martin, I'm getting tired of hearing about this woman. I don't think that's Brenda Martin's fault, and if it were you or I, Dana, I mean, I'd hope everybody that gave a lick about me would be rattling the cages and making enough noise as possible. Is it a fact or a situation where maybe the media has gone overboard? Perhaps. But at the same time, if Brenda Martin is innocent, like she claims and like her supporters claim, then why shouldn't they do everything and anything possible to get her story out there? Although I do understand why families of other jailed Canadians might be upset, because maybe their cases haven't captured the same amount of attention, but I don't think that's Brenda Martin's fault. After all, this is a woman. I mean, how many strings can she really be pulling in terms of media coverage of her case when she's sitting in a jail cell in Mexico? If anything, she's got perhaps a well-organized campaign being led on her behalf by others, and they've done a very good job. But there also may be a reason for all this coverage, and that's because there may be some real legitimacy to the story.
Yep.
And if there is, I think this is scandalous. If it isn't, I guess she fooled us all, and shame on us for buying into this. But, you know, I think now we've seen politicians in Ottawa getting involved. Some have gone further than others. I heard one calling for an outright boycott of traveling to Mexico because of what's being done. And yes, two MPs did make a trip down to Mexico last week and paid her a visit. Brenda Martin called it a photo op. That's fine, I guess, if that photo op continues to keep her story in the news. I don't know that that's a bad thing. I mean, photo ops can be good things, too. I guess if some people are trying to score political points off her back, again, if the end result is Brenda Martin gets justice, then I guess who cares who scores political points over it? That's how I look at it.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, Mike McIntyre, see, I said it right, justice reporter with the Winnipeg Free Press and radio host for the syndicated radio show Crime and Punishment on Chorus and Ralco Radio Networks is here to talk about some high-profile cases in the news. One of the stigmas or one of the things about Canada, especially when it comes to the media, is that we're so boring, that there's not much going on up here, and maybe we're guilty a little bit or a lot of not reporting it like the cable networks do in the States of the high-profile cases. I know you do it on your show, and I try to do what I can here, but another case that's been big in the news, and we haven't heard about it lately, at least for the last few weeks, is a former Canadian Prime Minister, Brian Mulroney, talk about kickbacks, German businessmen, fraud, theft, you name it. There's one of the highest people in the land in Canada being put before the Commons committees and before the public, yet I doubt very much that any of it was broadcast anywhere outside of Canada. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it's been overshadowed by some of the other political scandals going on. You've got the governor of New York, of course, caught almost literally with his pants down. our scandals maybe aren't as sexy as some of the ones we see in the United States or other countries, but you're right. I mean, the Mulroney Schreiber affair certainly is an interesting story, and it's one that very much evokes strong feelings on both sides. I suppose, Dana, the facts maybe don't even matter that much to most people, whatever the facts are, because people, much like when Brian Mulroney was Prime Minister of Canada, a lot of people loved him and think he was great for this country, and a lot of people hated him and think he was a disaster for Canada. And I would expect that people are very much towing those same sort of lines right now in terms of judging whether Mulroney has done anything wrong or not. We know there's all sorts of investigations going on. The RCMP are looking at this as to whether, as you say, there were kickbacks being given. But I think people will tend to vote with their heart and where their hearts were in terms of looking back on Mulroney's time in power. People, I think, are very much split on whether the man's done anything wrong, and I imagine just as they were split on whether he did anything good for Canada.
You know, I got a perfect script idea for one of those dopey American movies. They could run that story, you know, Mulroney and the German businessman and stuff. And what do you think of Jay Leno playing Mulroney? They both have
they wouldn't have to cast the chin or use any CGI or special effects. He'd have that down pat. But as I say, in order to sell it south of the border, you may have to write in, I don't know, some kind of illicit love story for Brian Mulroney. I think sex sells, and one thing the Schreiber story doesn't really have is that sex element to it, such as the scandals that really seem to grab the headlines down south. Who knows? I mean, maybe that'll be uncovered down the road. But right now, it looks like it's just more of a financial scandal.
Yeah, absolutely. But in both cases, in the Spitzer case and this case, somebody got screwed. Anyway, I want to talk about the Devil Among Us. And, you know, we can all think of who that might be, but there was a notorious pedophile by the name of Peter Whitmore. Actually, his case came to a closure not too far away from where I'm broadcasting right now. And you've got a new book in the works about Mr. Whitmore. Tell us about it.
Yeah, plugging away at it as we speak, and it's due out late this year, late 2008, and it will be my fourth true crime book, something I very much enjoy doing, of course, broadcasting in radio and writing in print. You're very much restricted by time elements or space restrictions, and so with a book you can obviously take a story and develop it in a way that those other mediums do not allow you to do. And so the Whitmore story, like the topics of my other three books, to me there's a lot more to this individual, to this case, that warrants a much deeper look. Whitmore, his most recent brush with the law was certainly his most serious brush with the law, and that was a very high-profile kidnapping of two young boys in the prairies of Manitoba and Saskatchewan, a manhunt, Saskatchewan's very first Amber Alert that was issued,
yes,
and a manhunt that came to an end with a standoff at an abandoned farmhouse. Whitmore now serving a life sentence after being pleading guilty to his crimes last summer, although a very controversial deal he struck, in which the Justice Department agreed not to seek a dangerous offender label against him, which would have jailed him indefinitely, although in Canada that still would allow him to apply for parole one day. Whitmore, very much a blight on society. His criminal history goes back to the late 1980s. He's been preying on children, manipulating his way into communities small and large, and into families. And his modus operandi has often been to deceive and to prey. And he has done all sorts of horrible things in his past. One of the main issues that my book, Devil Among Us, is going to look at is just how this man was allowed to be on the streets back in 2006. There were so many warning signs, so many red flags that something terrible was imminent, and yet at the same time this country allowed this man to still be among us, and look what happened. And fortunately some change is coming in the wake of the Whitmore case, and I'll also look at that. But I guess one of the questions is, why did it take something so dire to happen before anybody realized that the system was very much broken?
I look at a parallel in the Jessica Marie Lunsford kidnapping and murder and the John Cooey case that I've covered many times on the show, including Jessica's dad, Mark Lunsford, and something that they call Jessica's Law in the States that, again, I've worked on my program and had some of the people behind that on here. When we talk about mandatory minimum sentences for these types of predators, there is a flaw in the system, and we need to protect our children. If we can't protect them, I'm not sure who we can protect. I've said that a million times, Mike. This is something that we have to look at. Peter Whitmore shouldn't be out there prowling and looking for his next victim. And I know you've touched on it somewhat that they are working on that, but how important and how much of an aspect will that be in your book?
Well, I hope that the book will certainly open a lot of eyes to what is going on in this country and what has been allowed to go on, and I guess how many people have passed the buck over the years, and you know, let Peter Whitmore be someone else's problem.
Yeah.
And sadly, there are a lot of Peter Whitmores still out there. There's a lot of devils among us right now who have yet to be caught and maybe who have yet to strike in the way that Whitmore did. Sadly, it may only be a matter of time. And the reality is there are a lot of people out in society right now who have no business being out there, whose only goal is to prey upon children. And for a country and a society that that claims that we put the rights of children and we value children so much. We have an awfully funny way of showing it sometimes. We are willing to gamble, and sometimes the results are tragic, as it was in the Whitmore case. I hope the book will serve as a real wake-up call to what has gone wrong and what needs to be done to ensure that this sort of thing and this sort of individual isn't allowed to continue to prey on society.
I know it's only Tuesday, but what have you got planned for your Sunday show?
You know, the Sunday show is looking to be a very interesting one, because I'm hoping to have, and I just had some talks today with, there's an interesting new television show that's set to premiere early next month on Spike TV in the U.S., but it's also available in Canada. And it's a show that it's called DEA, which of course is short for Drug Enforcement Administration. And what this company has been able to do is get all sorts of fabulous access to the DEA, to special agents and task force officers, mainly following them in the Detroit to Michigan division. And this looks at basically what they do on a day-in, day-out basis as they battle illegal drugs, mainly drugs, also weapons. This is sort of a hard-hitting new reality show, and I'm expecting to be joined this Sunday by actually one of the special agents with the DEA who has participated in this program, and will give us, I guess, a first-hand look at what sort of things we're going to see on the show and what life is like battling international drug traffickers and weapon traffickers on the mean streets of Michigan.
Your website is www.mikeoncrime.com. It's a fascinating website. Your show, Crime and Punishment, Sundays on the Chorus and Ralco radio networks. Of course, you're a reporter, crime reporter with the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike McIntyre, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dana. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Mike McIntyre from Crime and Punishment, and check out his webpage, check out his radio show, because there's not many of us that do this type of programming, and Mike does a great show for sure. You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio Network. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. Write this website down, or pick it up on the replay, whatever. It's www.savebrendafund.ca. www.savebrendafund.ca. What I thought I would do is follow up a little bit more on what Mike McIntyre and I were talking about, Brenda Martin. You know, can you think of more of a nightmare than being locked in a jail, no trial, you know, claiming innocence, 2 years at Mexican jail to boot. You know, we've had Dog the Bounty Hunter on the program, and he was very clear as far as Mexican jails go, and how Brenda Martin has kept her sanity for 2 years is beyond me. And this is something that, and I know that there are many other people from many countries, and this show goes worldwide, that are locked in foreign jails. But in this particular case, we're talking about Brenda Martin. And I thought I would bring on Paul Macklin. He's the founder of the Save Brenda Fund, and get his perspective on what's going on. Welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you very much for having us there, Dana. It's important to get out the word to everyone who's listening that we have a tragedy on our hands, and we're trying to figure out a way to resolve it.
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting. It's heartbreaking. And when you hear, and I'm sure most in Canada heard Brenda's plea for help here a few weeks back, it's just heart-wrenching, and not being able to see a conclusion, and I hope one does come, believe me, to this, to get one of our own out of this jail, you know, have a trial, do something.
Right. I think part of the frustration for Brenda is that she doesn't see an end in sight that has any positive nature to it. All she sees is and hears are indications that they're going to convict her no matter what her defense counsel does. And as a result, the rumor is going around that they're going to give her 15 years, you know, which would just be over the top. So she's just in an absolute state of panic. obviously suffering from, I think one could fairly say, some form of mental illness at this point, and based on a psychiatrist that we had go in, that was the diagnosis. And I guess, would I feel differently? I doubt it. I suspect I'd be in the same position. I don't think I'd be any stronger than she has been. She's really been a tower of strength in terms of trying to deal and cope with a situation where she adamantly believes that she's innocent. And based on the material we've seen in her file, it appears that they don't have any evidence of any consequence against her. So I guess you're stuck with the reality of trying to prove a negative in the Mexican prison, and that is that you are not guilty, because their presumption still, despite what the Mexican embassy issued in a press release about a week ago, they said they now have the presumption of innocence. Well, check that out. It's not exactly quite true. What they have is, they've passed at the federal level a presumption of innocence constitutional amendment, but just like here, it also would require their states to approve it. So they've got 31 states have to approve it.
Right.
So they're a long way from a presumption of innocence.
Yeah, and the tragedy of this whole case is that someone, and now the media is picking up on the story and spinning it somewhat, and I think any publicity is good publicity, I think, for Brenda in this case.
I think so, too. But, yes, we really do. Well, it's amazing what the outpouring of from the public has been. And I think that really what we have now is the people's cause here,
yeah,
to try to make sure that Brenda gets out of that Mexican prison in one piece. And, you know, she'll never be the same person she was when she walked in the door, but I still think she's a human being and a Canadian who's in trouble. And we as Canadians must be reaching out to her and doing everything possible to help her.
I know she came up with the term photo op. A couple of conservative MPs went down for a visit, and I hope it was more than that. Although my last guest said any kind of PR for Brenda, even if it is just a photo op, is good PR because it keeps the story alive. But has Foreign Affairs, the Prime Minister's office, been helping? Can they do more? What can we do here in the media to help?
Well, I think that there's no doubt in my mind that the Prime Minister can do much more. I'm at least pleased and hopeful that they're going to do more, because in fact they've taken an interest. And I know that Jason Kenney has taken enough interest that he's trying to background search and bring himself up to speed on the full contents of her file. And that to me is encouraging. But still, in the end, what we believe is that the only way that Mexico wants to rid themselves of her is through a conviction. And whether they have evidence or not seems to be somewhat irrelevant. And I guess that's where this presumption of guilt comes in. That you can presume you're guilty, and you, if you aren't successful in proving your innocence, then you're obviously going to suffer the consequences. What we need to do, I think, are a number of things. First of all, we need to keep putting the pressure on the Prime Minister and other political officials like the Foreign Minister and so forth through the email process. We have a website called Save Brenda Martin Fund, and in that website you will find the email addresses for the individuals that we think you should be sending your personal concerns and your personal feelings to, because I think that's what we have to get through. We don't want form letters. We want people to express how they truly feel about Brenda and the way in which our government has related to her calls for help. As well, we obviously need money. You know, despite the fact this has been what you would call a national story, we haven't been able to collect enough money to pay her legal bills. So she's not only going to be burdened with the problem of mental instability and recovery from that, but she's going to have a large number of legal bills in the process. So we would really encourage people, if they could spare a few dollars, to help us out, and they can find how to do that at our website.
Again, that's www.savebrendafund.ca. And how important is this? You know, just think, a Canadian citizen, I don't care where you're from, if you're a U.S. citizen, whatever, you're in a foreign jail, you're in a hellhole, for lack of a better term. No trial, no jurisprudence, no due process, if you want to call it that. I don't care. We need to do what we can to help.
Absolutely.
Paul Macklin, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dana. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. you know, it's heart-wrenching. And I'm not sure if you heard this lady on the radio and television asking for the Prime Minister of Canada's help. And, you know, it's very clear here that she needs help. She's very despondent, depressed, believes no one cares. Those have seen her think that she won't live for another 6 months. She's lost over 30 pounds, making her under 100 pounds. She's tried to commit suicide 3 times. And the whole process is, there has been no process. She's just been freaking locked up. And how tragic is that? You know, it's just, it's heart-wrenching, it's sad, and we have to do what we can to help. Sorry about the train noise there. Anyway, that is tonight's show. I want you to stay tuned, okay? Because we're going to carry on with last week's show, okay? Last week's show is one that we weren't able to air live because of some issues with the server, but we're going to be able to fix that. So just stay tuned. The Dana Pretzer Show will continue. I'm going to do the regular ending as we normally do, and then we're going to go right into the next show and go from there. So I do appreciate you all listening. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Of course, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can download podcasts. You can leave comments. You can do whatever you just feel like doing. So stay tuned, okay? I may drop the server for just a second, and then we'll turn it right back on. And those of you that missed last week's live show, it will be airing here very shortly. Good night, everybody.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.